It's time!
Happy number one medal! The eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's out!
He has done it! It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Lava, you're trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of face.
That is it!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I am here with Zach Cordova. We also got Owen Kelty producing for this week. We got a bit of a slow week here as we kind of gear up for UFC 298, just, you know, a week away next week. But we still have some fun stuff to talk about. Mainly, we got last week to talk about all those fights that happened. Me and Zach were just talking about Drew Dober versus Hinata Moikano, which did not go the way that we were expecting. But before that, Zach, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. End of week, still tired, but we get through it. We're going to talk a little bit of fight today. It's always a good time. Still haven't heard that UFC 300 main event, so that's still kind of bothering me. But I have a feeling that we're going to be hearing something pretty soon from that, so I'm a bit excited.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what is finally in that main event for UFC 300. I mean, if you were a betting man, Zach, what would you put any predictions out there, or are you just excited to see whatever happens or whatever gets announced
for a UFC 300 main event? Man, I don't even know at this point. I feel like Dana's mentioned it a couple times, saying that we haven't guessed it, and I'm genuinely curious. I feel like we're missing something, and I think when it is finally announced, it's going to kind of blow everybody's mind. So at this point, I have no expectation. I don't know what's going to happen.
I know, because I think what everyone's kind of expecting is like an Adesanya, Dricus du Plessis, maybe like Adesanya, Alex Pereira. Everyone thinks that it's, you know, Adesanya is like maybe probably going to be in that final slot. But since Dana White has been saying, yeah, you guys haven't predicted it yet, it's making me think, like, I don't even know, like crazy stuff, like maybe John Jones, DC3, something like that. I don't know. That would be ridiculous.
Something crazy. I mean, if it was Izzy Pereira, that's going to set the world on fire. I just know it is, because who doesn't want to see that? Especially at 205, that'd be an interesting matchup.
That'd be very, very interesting, especially since Izzy wouldn't have to worry about the wrestling, because that was the problem when he had moved up to 205 the last time.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, so who knows? That would be an interesting fight. I don't know if you know, the real cage heads out there would agree with Adesanya getting a shot at 205 immediately coming off the loss. But hey, we'll see. We'll see. Anything can happen with UFC 300. But I want to talk a bit about this UFC fight night that we have coming up on Saturday night. Not the most exciting fight night, I will say, in, you know, the history of the UFC. But there's still some pretty good fights in here. The main event is headlined by Jack Hermanson and Joe Pyfer as a middleweight division bout, but there's also some other good fights in this main card. The first one I want to talk about is Michael Johnson versus Darius Flowers. Now, I'm sure everyone has kind of their own take on Michael Johnson's career, going from fighting some of the best guys on planet Earth and like giving them good fights to fighting some very like mediocre fighters and then also giving them really good fights and then losing those. So he's kind of been all around the division. Zach, what do you think about this fight?
I mean, you already said it. Michael Johnson is the most famous unpredictable fighter in MMA history, I feel like. I mean, the guy could beat John Jones one night and then get head kick KO'd by Macy Barber the next. Like, I genuinely don't know how to pick him when it comes to Michael Johnson fights. However, I do think this matchup against Darius Flowers, he's fighting a guy who I believe this is his third fight in the UFC, kind of a younger guy, kind of a guy who puts himself, I feel like, in a lot of danger. In that last fight, he definitely took a lot of shots. He does have a really good chin, but I don't know. Michael Johnson, and even though how much he's aged, his speed, his timing, and his power are still there. And I just don't think he's really regressed at all. I just think that if it's his night, if it's his night, if it's not his night, then it's not his night. I mean, that's typically how a Michael Johnson fight goes at this point.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think that Michael Johnson is, I feel like we see the same out of him every single time. And it's just honestly the other person on the side of the octagon that kind of decides if he's going to win or lose. He always has that, same skill set of being actually a pretty sharp striker, kind of plotting at the end of his strikes, using his length a little bit, his speed, some sneaky grappling with there. But like we've seen time and time again, if he just gets pressured, or countered, it just does not go well for him. I'm looking at his most recent fights. I believe he's 2-2 in his past four, with losses from Jamie Mullarkey and Diego Ferrer, which both of those guys, I mean, it's funny that we kind of go back in his career and like he's fought guys like Khabib and like Justin Gaethje and like all these like fantastic fighters, Dustin Poirier. But even recent in his career, I mean, he's still fighting really great guys like Jamie Mullarkey, Mark Cherkasy, Diego Ferreira. So honestly, heading into this Darius Flower fights, considering that Darius Flowers, like you said, only has three fights in the UFC so far, and his most recent one was a loss to Jake Matthews, I think that Michael Johnson could definitely win this fight. I think it's leaning toward, I'm leaning more towards him in this one.
Yeah, no, I mean, with any time Michael Johnson fights, I feel like he could win now because it's just like when he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's pretty off. I mean, he's had fights where he'll dominate the first two rounds and then just end up getting knocked out in the third because he makes a mistake. And it he when I say famously inconsistent, I mean inconsistent in every round of a fight. He's just so unpredictable, and every time he fights, that I feel like the other guy always has a chance, but Michael Johnson could also beat anybody who's standing across from him. So I'm excited. I think this is going to be a fun fight. I think it definitely ends in a finish, and I think it'll be a fun way to kick off the main card.
Yeah, no, I think at the end of the day it will be a very, very fun fight. Honestly, whenever Michael Johnson fights, it's a fun fight. And as you were saying, to the tune of like he'll fight perfect for like two rounds and then get knocked down the third. That's exactly what happened in his fight with Josh Emmett. So off the back of that, I mean, who knows what we'll see. I'm just very, very interested. And Michael Johnson always comes out the fight, so I think it'll be a good one. But for final picks, Zach, are you going with Michael Johnson or Darius Flowers?
Give me Michael Johnson. I like him in this, and I think Darius Flowers leaves his chin open a little too much for my liking, and I think Michael Johnson could catch him at some point in this one. So give me Michael Johnson by finish.
All right, I like it. I like it. I definitely think it's going to happen and finish. It's going to end in a finish as well. I'm kind of flip-flopping, leaning more towards Johnson myself, but we'll see how it pans out. Anyway, though, we have another fight in this main card that I'm very, very interested in, and that is Brad Tavares versus Gregory Rodriguez. I believe Gregory Rodriguez's nickname, it's RoboCop, right, Zach?
RoboCop. Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm a big RoboCop guy, so this is an exciting one for me.
Yeah, no, this is a massive fight. I'm a huge RoboCop guy as well. Also, Brad Tavares has been around the UFC. I mean, I think he's been fighting in the UFC for at least the past half decade, maybe even more. Most recently beat Chris Weidman, if I'm remembering correctly, in his comeback fight. So this fight is very, very interesting for a number of reasons. Brad Tavares, I feel like, has kind of evolved and developed into a very interesting fighter that he is now. And Gregory Rodriguez, I mean, just based on us both being fans, I mean, his style is so exciting to watch, Zach.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he's got the striking, he's got the power, he's got the really good grappling. I think he's a tough guy to beat. He's really well-rounded, and when you look at Brad Tavares, he's definitely somebody who's stood in there and held his own against some of the better fighters in the division. He's one of those guys, I think, just going off of what you said, I think he's been there since 2010 in the UFC. So he's fought the who's who. He's fought a lot of the bigger names, but when it comes down to it, I don't think in this matchup, he's the guy who's kind of behind in all categories in terms of grappling. I'm gonna call him RoboCop. Gregory Rodriguez definitely has the edge there on the ground, and I also think he has the edge on the feet too. Just when it comes to power, I think Tavares notoriously struggles with heavier hitters, and I think wherever this fight or wherever he wants this fight to go, RoboCop is going to decide where it goes because he can stand and strike with him if he wants to, or he could take it to the ground and dominate there. But Brad Tavares is also notoriously one of the hardest people to take down in the UFC. So good luck getting him there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's something like very special with fighters that have been in the UFC for an extremely long period of time and have been like strikers, specifically like young strikers coming to the UFC that managed to stick around. I feel like they have impeccable takedown defense. Like, look at like an Alex Caceres or a Drew Dober. Maybe that's aged a little bit bad since it's an Ottawa Kano fight, but like a Brad Tavares, I feel like is a perfect example of guys that just have learned through, like, I don't know, just a kind of a gauntlet or a ring of fire over like literally a decade on how to defend takedowns. But anyway, though, to the focusing in on this fight, I think Brad Tavares is a real gatekeeper kind of in this middleweight division. Looking throughout his most recent wins and losses, he has losses to guys like Israel Adesanya, Edmund Shahbazyan, Dricus du Plessis, who's now the middleweight champion, and Bruno Silva, who's also another really, really good fighter. So honestly, the kind of the whole storyline for me in this fight is if Gregory Rodriguez is able to get past Brad Tavares, the gatekeeper, and really make himself a threat at the be or at the top of this middleweight division. Because we've seen fighters that are able to get past Brad Tavares are real contenders in this middleweight division. So Zach, I guess my question is, you think that he can definitely do that? Get past Brad?
Like I was saying, Gregory Rodriguez, this is kind of like the matchup for him. Like I said before, he determines where this one goes. If he wants to take it to the ground, if he could get Tavares there, he could take it there and definitely dominate. If he wants to stay on the feet, I don't think Tavares has the power to really hurt him. I think he has one knockout in the past 10 years. So I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be a Gregory Rodriguez little RoboCop finish within the distance. I'm going to call KO second round just to be bold.
Wow, okay. I was kind of going more for KO round three for RoboCop because, I mean, hearing what you're saying is it makes a lot of sense to me, honestly. The power that Gregory Rodriguez has, Brad Tavares has historically not stood up well to hard-hitting strikers. And also, when the fight gets to the ground, exactly like you said, I think Gregory Rodriguez also has the edge there. But I think the main thing that Brad Tavares can do to possibly win that fight is kind of stall out those clinch positions if Gregory Rodriguez really does shoot for a takedown. I think that maybe that can lead to him stealing a couple rounds and also possibly focusing on that leg kick, which he used expertly against Chris Weidman. Obviously, Chris Weidman's kind of a bit over the hump, but I think that's something that maybe Brad Tavares can do to definitely make that fight a bit more competitive. But yeah, I think Gregory Rodriguez should take that fight, but we'll see. Moving on, though, in this main card, we have another really fun matchup. Dan Ige, number 13, ranked in the featherweight division, taking on Andre Feely, one of my favorite nicknames also in the UFC, Andre Touchy Feely. Andre Feely is kind of like another one of those guys that I was talking about, like a Brad Tavares that has been in the UFC for an extremely long amount of time. And it has developed into kind of an interesting fighter that's really, really good at denying takedowns, and using this kind of long, lanky striking. So, Zach, what do you see in this fight? What makes you excited? And who do you think has the edge here?
I think this is a fun fight. I mean, we were looking last week at Dober and Moicano in the co-main, and we were thinking that was going to produce fireworks. Not really what people thought it was going to be, but an all right fight. But this one, I think, is definitely another one that's just kind of made to get you excited for a main event, get you excited for a Joe Piefer coming up next. This is one of those fights that kind of draw on the eyes to the card. And Touchy Feely there, my favorite nickname as well. He's coming in on 2 weeks' notice. So I wonder how that's going to affect both guys in this fight. Andre Feely is one of those guys. He's a really good kickboxer. He's really crafty. He's got a little bit of power. He's coming off of a knockout win in December on the last card of the year. But I also kind of questioned the gas tank going into this one. Dan Ige was training for a fight before this, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, very, very
Yeah.
true. And I will say it's a very different preparation that he need to do to prepare for Andre Feely versus the person that backed out of this fight, which was Lerone Murphy. The I believe featherweight from UK that's on a KO streak. He's been really, really impressive in the UFC. But off the back of that, though, I think Murphy is a lot different stylistically than Andre Feely. Andre Feely is a lot more kind of a bit more of a point fighter, I would say. Uses distance a whole lot more, is a bit more quick, where Leroy Murphy tries to line up a big shot. So off the back of that, though, I think that I'm honestly leaning more towards Dan Ige in this. I think that Andre Feely is a fantastic fighter. I think that he definitely has an edge in the striking department in this fight. But I think once it gets to the ground, I think Andre Feely is just going to get kind of stuck there and not really be able to do too much to really get up, at least from what I've seen in his past fights. But Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. I think if this stays standing, I kind of give the edge a little bit to Feely, just because I feel like, I mean, like I said, he's kind of one of those crafty kickboxers who's always able to kind of find his shot eventually. And I mean, a veteran of the game, he's kind of seen it all. He knows how to handle himself well on the feet. So I think the biggest problem for Ige in this matchup is the range. Feely is the kind of the longer fighter. He's definitely the taller fighter. I'm not sure exactly the reach advantage on him there, but I know he definitely has it. So for him, he's going to want to try to keep that distance, try to keep range fighting, where Ige is going to have to try to find a way to get inside. And but I think especially with Feely coming in on the short notice, this is definitely kind of a fight that favors Ige in terms of he's going to try to get inside. He's going to push that pace. He's going to test that gas tank. And I think if it gets past the second round, I mean, I feel like Philly's going to get into this third round and he's going to be gassed, and that'll be Ige's time to go and win this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely could see that. But also, I will kind of, I don't know, shine a light a bit on Dan Ige's most recent fights, which his most recent fight was a loss to Bryce Mitchell. Bryce Mitchell, a very impressive grappler in the featherweight division. But I'm just looking through his other opponents here. And honestly, if I'm being, you know, completely candid, it's honestly not the, you know, highest level of competition that we see in the featherweight division, which is, you know, a very stacked division. His most recent wins are over Nate Landwehr and Damon Jackson, which both of those fighters are, you know, good fighters, impressive fighters, but they're not really at the top of the featherweight division or even at the level of Andre Feely. So honestly, I think this will probably be Dan Ige's toughest test since, I would say, maybe even going back to 2022 when he fought Movsar Evloev. So off the back of that, I think it might be a bit closer of a fight, especially if Andre Feely is able to keep it on the feet. I think if he's able to do that, he could definitely win this fight. But if Dan Ige manages to keep the takedown, steal a couple rounds, I think it's his fight to win.
Yeah, and no, definitely. I agree with you. I was going to say, I agree with you. I think this is a really close fight, but I also think the 2 weeks is definitely going to make an impact. I feel like stepping on late notice for anybody is always hard. We've seen guys who come in and kind of surprise you, but I think this is kind of Ige's fight to win. I wouldn't be shocked though if Touchy Feely could slip in a quick little shot there and put him down, but my pick's going to be Ige.
Yeah, I think the smart pick, at least for me, is Ige. But, I mean, knowing Andre Feely, he definitely is one of those guys that could have a surprise knockout or surprise performance. So we'll just have to wait and see. But moving on to this main event for this main card, we have Jack Hermanson, number 11, in the middleweight division, taking on unranked Joe Pyfer. Joe Pyfer has had a ton of hype heading into this main event. He is on a four-fight win streak, four-fight finish streak as well. Three KO TKOs, and then the most recent one he had was a sub via arm triangle over Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Really, really impressive stuff. This guy has kind of lit a fire in the middleweight division, just running through dudes, finishing them really, really impressively. And he has a tough test in Jack Hermanson. Jack Hermanson has kind of I remember him first kind of making his, you know, notice on the middleweight division, taking out Jacare Souza, and everyone kind of like thinking, is this guy the real deal? Will he actually stick around in the middleweight division? And a couple years later, here we are. He's number 11 ranked. He's really, really good fighter, really great grappler. So heading into this one, Zach, who do you think has the edge and what do you kind of see in this fight?
I mean, man, Joe Pfeiffer is exciting. I think the hype is kind of real. I mean, this is definitely the test to kind of figure it out. I mean, main event spot against a ranked opponent, it's probably the biggest fight of his life. And I think the biggest challenge for him coming into this is, if this does see a fourth and fifth round, how does his cardio fare through that? How does the extra 10 minutes treat him? Because I don't think we've seen Joe Pfeiffer have any sort of cardio problems up to this point. But I also don't think we've seen him. Have we seen him in the UFC fight a full fight? I don't believe so, because he's always finishing his opponents. That power is unlike anything else. Recently, he just scored higher on that punch machine than Francis Ngannou did, the heavyweight champ, former UFC heavyweight champion, I should say. And to me, that's unreal, because he's, I believe, 80 pounds less than him as a middleweight compared to a 265er. So the guy packs real power. As a boxer, he's very patient, and I'm very surprised by that, because usually people with as much power as him are kind of more inclined to swing a little bit wildly, just trying to find their shot, where I've found when watching a Joe Pfeiffer fight, he is very patient, and he's usually able to find a shot at some point. So this is an exciting fight. I think Hermanson's also coming off a pretty long layoff after coming off of a knockout loss, actually. So maybe potentially a little bit of a setup fight by the UFC. I don't know if I want to call Hermanson a setup fight, but I also know that this is definitely one that kind of favors a power puncher like a Joe Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, it's, we should, call it like we see it, honestly. I think that this kind of is a setup fighter. I mean, if you look at kind of the trajectory of both of these guys' career, Jack Hermanson, a really, really great fighter, and has developed into this, you know, kind of interesting grappling middleweight threat. But also, he's not really a person that's getting butts in seats and having people, like, tune in for his fights versus Joe Pfeiffer, who has been an extremely exciting fighter as of yet so far into the UFC. So I think that what they're trying to do is honestly set up Joe Pfeiffer against an opponent that kind of tees up well for him and also has a middleweight ranking, so he could kind of steal that middleweight ranking. At least that's kind of how I view this fight. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. This is kind of like one of those fights to get him into the rankings, to really put his name out there, to put this kind of division on notice. This is a division that there's been a lot of craziness lately in the middleweight division, from the Izzy loss to now Duplessis holds the title, to people not knowing if Izzy's going to be fighting Duplessis at 300. The middleweight division's on fire right now, and Joe Pfeiffer is looking to get in on the fun here. However, I don't think Hermanson's as easy as a test as everyone's kind of making it out to be. That's why I'm a little iffy on the setup fight just yet. Hermanson's one of those guys who's kind of, he's incredibly decent. And when I say that, I mean, he's good everywhere, but he doesn't really excel at a single skill. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I just think when you're fighting against a Joe Pfeiffer, who has the more power on the feet, he's going to definitely kind of shy away from some of those moments where you want to get in a brawl with him or something like that, because Joe Pfeiffer could put you down with one shot. He also, I think, has the edge in the wrestling department over Hermanson, which we haven't seen him. We've seen him grapple a little bit up to this point. His ground and pound is nasty. But when I look at this fight, I think it's going to be standing. And I think Joe Pfeiffer has the edge just because of that power and slick boxing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the way I see this fight kind of playing out is a lot like the Jared Cannonier fight versus Jack Hermanson. Which I believe happened a while ago, back in 2019. And kind of what happened in that fight was, you know, Jared Cannonier, known as a really big power puncher in the middleweight division, a bit more measured of a striker, similar to Joe Pfeiffer. And what kind of happened was, in that first round, Jack Hermanson started out really, really strong, tried to, kind of put the pressure on Jared Cannonier, and it just looked like slowly but surely, every single time Cannonier landed, a bit of Hermanson kind of wilted away up until the second round, where he just completely wilted and then got finished via TKO. So I can honestly just see the same thing kind of playing out, especially considering the stylistic similarities between Cannonier and Pfeiffer. Both of the guys are incredibly hard-hitting punchers, a bit more measured, knows how to put the pressure on, and recognizes when a fight's kind of near the conclusion and kind of want to amp it up and really try to get a finish. So honestly, I think Joe Pyfer, I mean, this is his fight to, really stake a claim at the middleweight division, at least for me.
Yeah,
I don't
no,
know if you think
definitely. I definitely
gotcha.
agree with that. This is definitely kind of his making his claim right now, putting it, like I said, putting this division on notice. And I don't think there's any better way to enter the rankings than with the KO win. And I think that's what he does. That's going to be my pick. I'm going to pick Joe Pyfer. And I think he gets it. I want to say he gets it done within, if I want to put a round on it, I don't know if I could put a round on it, but I'm going to say within four. I don't think we get to really see him test that gas tank. I think he finishes it within four, maybe a third round knockout, second round knockout, something like that. I don't think it's a first round by any means, because I don't think Hermanson's going out that easy. But still, give me Joe Pyfer by knockout. If we want to put a round on it, let's say three.
Gotcha. I think I'm going to go Joe Pyfer round two, very similar to, again, that Cannonier fight. I do agree with you. I think Hermanson will stick around in that first round. But yeah, I think that it's just going to be tough heading into that second, third round. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how it kind of pans out. It should be a very, very exciting fight. And who knows? I mean, we might have a new middleweight contender this time next week. But that pretty much is it for the UFC fight night. I do have a couple of other news things I do want to talk about in the MMA world. Most importantly, Conor McGregor's return timeline. I don't know if you've been seeing this, Zach, but it is just completely up in the air. I mean, just kind of give context to our listeners out there. He originally said that he was going to be fighting at International Fight Week, which was like, I believe, June 29th, something like that. He said that was going to be fairly close. But then now Dana White is coming on to podcasts and interviews saying that that is clearly not the date. We're going to try to get him during next fall. So, Zach, just after all of this kind of, you know, continued unclarity, what's your opinion on this?
I mean, I honestly don't know anymore. This has kind of gone to a point where I don't know if it's just trolling on Connor's part or just trying to troll Chandler and just using like different kind of tactics, I guess, to get in his head. But I want to see Connor back in the octagon. I think everybody does. The sport is better with him in it. And I think he definitely knows that too. Not just I think that. Connor's made it known that when he's in the sport is better. When he actually returns, nobody knows. I think the movie is going to come out before he actually fights again. We were hearing International Fight Week, and then we were hearing maybe 300, and then now I think Dana said maybe the fall. I mean, it's just all over the place, and I would love to see Connor back in the octagon sooner than later. But I also really feel for Michael Chandler in this situation. I mean, he's been on the sidelines now for, I think, over a year waiting for Connor, and he's kind of wasting away his prime. I don't know what you think about that, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's really sucks for Michael Chandler, because at this point, he's missing out on paychecks from other big fights that he could be taking. He could be, you know, in the lightweight title picture if he really wanted to. Or at least kind of fight those big name contenders instead of just waiting. But it's crazy that you mentioned that we might see Conor McGregor fight in Roadhouse in the film before we actually see him fight in real life, which is it's ridiculous. I can't believe that we're actually talking about this, like he won't come back again. I feel like this has been like going on for the past 5 years, if he will ever fight again or not. And yeah, I don't know. It's just it's always so unclear with Conor McGregor.
I mean, the reality is starting to become that the Irish actor Conor McGregor trained all of these years, became a two-division UFC champion just to prepare for this role. And I'm starting to believe that more day by day, that maybe Conor's not a fighter anymore. Maybe he's just an entertainer and he's just an actor now. And all of that before was just to prepare for this role in his future and maybe the WWE. So who knows if we'll ever see him back in the octagon. I know I definitely want to. I know you probably want to. I know everybody probably wants to. So as soon as they get that sorted out, I'm on board.
The harder question to answer is who doesn't want to see him in the ring again? Honestly, I mean,
exactly.
It's an event every single time he fights. So, I mean, I just hope they figure it out. But we'll see, though. Another one last bit of news I want to talk about before we wrap up this episode. And it's related to actually next week's UFC pay-per-view. Ilya Topuria is coming out and saying that if he wins against Volkanovski in his featherweight title bout, he won't give Volk an immediate rematch, which is a little crazy to me considering what Volk has done in the featherweight division as a champion. But on top of that, he also said he refuses to defend his belt against Holloway, Yair Rodriguez, or Brian Ortega. So I just kind of wanted your thoughts on that. Do you think that's like a okay thing to do, a little sleazy? Do you think he's already cocky, even though he hasn't gotten the belt yet? What's your opinion on the set?
I'm not shocked that this is coming from a man with a tattoo of his own face on his chest. I mean, he's definitely a bit arrogant, but arrogant and confident. I think that he really does believe that this fight is his and this is his matchup, and he's just going to run through Volkanovski. But we've seen many people think that they can do that to Volk, and it's just, he's just so good, and he continues to show us, especially when he fights in this 145 division, that there's just levels to this. And I think for Topuria to already be kind of looking past him and looking towards who his future opponents would be and saying who he's not going to let fight, I mean, I don't think he gets to fully decide that. We saw Leon Edwards say that he didn't want to give the shot to Colby. And guess what happened? He's fighting Colby. So I don't think he gets to call the shots like that. I think Volk has done so much, especially in this 45 division. He is one of, I think, the longest reigning champions currently. I think he's been reigning since 2019. I don't think there's any way you don't give him a rematch. I mean, unless Topuria really finishes it in a round or two and does it so convincingly that, hey, maybe we don't want to see Volk back in the title fight right away. But I really doubt that happens. I don't think Volk lets it slip away that easy. And I also think that you can't look at everything Volk has done and not give him an immediate rematch in this scenario.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it comes down to that, honestly. It's just considering everything that he's done for that featherweight division. I remember seeing a fact, definitely have to fact check me on this a couple days ago. I saw it on Instagram, I believe. But since Volkanovski has become champ in 2019 for the featherweight division, there has been 29 title changes throughout the UFC. So to have that level of consistency in one champion, and in one division, it's something that we, again, haven't really seen, you know, in the past half decade or decade. So for Topuria to come out and say that he won't give an immediate rematch to somebody like that, I think it's just a little crazy. And again, to kind of what you said, is a little arrogant. I don't know. I guess that just kind of irked me a little bit the wrong way, especially since he said that he wouldn't fight Max Holloway, my favorite fighter. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think some of these people become champion and think that they get to call every single one of the shots, which, don't get me wrong, he's a big name and he's a huge star in the sport. I know if they take UFC to Spain, especially with him as champion, I'm sure that's going to do unreal numbers. You're going to have completely sold out crowd and the whole country of Spain rooting for him. But I also don't think that he's just going to walk in and decide who he's fighting, where he's fighting, and when he's fighting right off the bat, especially when you have a champion like Volkanovski who's been reigning for so long, and he's been that guy who fights anybody, anywhere. He just fought Islam on 7 days' notice. I don't think the UFC is going to look at that and not give him an immediate rematch if Volk wants it. If Volk says that he wants the rematch, who's going to tell him no?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I completely agree with you, but we'll see who ends up as the champion next week. We'll get into all of our predictions, previews, all that good stuff again next week as we gear up for UFC 298. But I think that just about wraps up this installment of Pound for Pound. Again, make sure to check out the UFC Fight Night on Saturday and our preview of UFC 298 coming out next week. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my always great co-host, Zach Cordova, and a huge shout out to our producer for this week, Owen Kelty. I've been Andrew Canary. Shout out to Bobby Chaffardini, our sports manager at WFEV. And Pound for Pound is a production of WFEV Sports.